Everybody needs money. That's why they call it money.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees.
So can you give us just a flyby of who Adam Smith was, when he lived, how he lived, and then just draw the distinctions between the wealth of nations and the theory of moral sentiments.
So Smith lived in the 18th century, sort of the middle chunk, 1723 to 1780, roughly. He is considered the first economist, which isn't fair. There were a lot of people doing economics at the time, what we would call economics. And the reason I think we think of Smith as the first economist, because he wrote a book, An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations, that was so extraordinary and so powerful and so insightful that people still read it today with profit. It's still worth reading. He has insights into life and into economics that are still worth reading. He's famous for a few things, some of which you've heard of. He was a big free trader. He was a big arguer against mercantilism, the idea that we needed protectionism to be wealthy. He invented the idea of the invisible hand, although it's not really the way he wrote about it. The way we think about it now isn't quite the way he wrote about it. He believed in liberty, but he was not an anarchist. He thought there were a lot of productive and useful things the government could do. But he was a free marketer in general, and in many ways, he made commerce respectable. So that's that book. But this other book, that's sort of a macrocosm book. His other book is a microcosm book. His other book is about how do we treat the people who interact with day to day? How do we treat the people we're seeing face to face? How do we treat our colleagues at work? How do we treat our family? How do we treat our close friends? And that world's all about empathy, sympathy, or lack of it. There's nothing about sympathy in the Wealth of Nations, and there's not much – there's self-interest in the theory of moral sentiments, but it's mainly how do we overcome that? How is it that we sometimes do the right thing? How is it that we sometimes put ourselves second? Because everything inside us screams, me, me, me. And I think that's a very profound truth about human nature. And he takes that truth and he spins it out in 1,000 different ways, and he writes well. So I encourage everybody to go read the book. You can find it at EconLib, econlib.org. There's no charge. You can search it there. You can find whatever you want. I read the entire book for no charge. But it might be slow going, so if you need some help, that's where I wrote my book.
So I just want to toss out a couple concepts, Adam Smith concepts, from having read your book, since I have not read The Theory of Moral Sentiments or The Wealth of Nations. The first is the Iron Law view, which you were kind of talking about, but the Iron Law view, what is it?
So this is not in Smith literally, but it's all through Smith, which is you think of yourself as more important than other people, and you think about yourself a lot more than you think about other people. And so the example I think I give in the book, although I had a lot of other examples, some of them got taken out, is that, you know, let's say you apply for a job. You send somebody an email, and a week goes by, and 2 weeks go by, and you think, oh, they think I'm an idiot. They don't want to hire me. I have no chance. My email got thrown out. They're so uninterested in me, they didn't even respond to say, we're not interested. And I think we've all had that experience in life where we just sort of – you're thinking about it when it's your email that you sent looking for the job. You're thinking about it about every 4 minutes. I check my email. I wonder if they wrote back. Every time it's like they didn't write back. They don't love me. But you forget. They're busy. They're absorbed with their own nonsense, their own whatever it is that's absorbing them every 4 minutes. And so as a result, it's very easy to forget – that you're not the center of the universe for other people. You're only the center of the universe for yourself. It's very hard to remember how other people look at you.
Who is the impartial spectator to Adam Smith?
So Smith gives us a method to help us remember that we're not so important. And he doesn't give us this method to be nice to us. He thinks it's how we actually sometimes make decisions. So he says, when we try to decide what to do, and we want to put ourselves first, the thing that stops us is being aware that what if somebody were watching, an impartial spectator, not my spouse, not my uncle, not my close friend, not my alter ego, not my good twin or my evil twin, but a stranger, a person who knew the facts of the matter and didn't have my self-interest in terms of judging whether I'm doing the right thing or not. So it's sort of like a little angel perched on your shoulder that you imagine is there thinking, I wonder if that's a good thing to do. So he says sometimes the impartial spectator will rein in your self-interest at the time. Other times, it'll be an after-the-fact educational lesson. You realize, oh, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. What I suggest in the book is use an actual impartial spectator at times. When you have a moral dilemma, when you have a situation at work, you have a situation in your family life where you're not sure what the right thing to do is, it's often a good idea to seek outside counsel, somebody you trust who's not going to just be a yes person and, oh, yeah, you're doing the right thing, but who's going to tell you, I don't know if that's – like say you want to deflate the footballs before the game, just hypothetically. And you say, well – I don't think we're going to get caught. I know, but what, suppose someone were watching. Would it be a good idea? You know, that's an example to me where it's the wrong thing to do. I don't think it's why the Patriots won, but it's the wrong thing to do. Unless everybody does it already, they probably do. Don't you think? Isn't it like common, maybe? Because I'm hoping, maybe.
So there's the interaction between the Iron Law view and the impartial spectator to counter that in Adam Smith's work. What about our desire to be not just loved, but to be lovely in Adam Smith's mind? What does that mean?
So Smith is very adamant, again, surprisingly to some people who might not know his other work, or who might have gotten a vision of Smith through third hand, Smith's very against the accumulation of wealth for its own sake. So here's a guy who writes a book about how nations get wealthy, and we all think that's a good thing and get out of poverty. But he says, for you personally, he said, the pursuit of wealth for its own sake, the pursuit of power, pursuit of fame, these are ambition generally. He said, these are bad things. They're poison. They're toxic. Try to avoid them. Because once you get on that treadmill, you can't get off. So that's what he says. Why do we want fame, power, money? He says, because then people pay attention to us. Not for what it does. This is, again, sort of a very alien idea to a modern economist, which I find very interesting. He says, money doesn't make you really happy. Having stuff doesn't really make you happy. The reason you like stuff is that people look up to you. They're impressed with you. They listen to what you have to say. When you walk into a room, they pay attention to you. That's why people pursue money, fame, and power. And he says it's a bad way to get attention. So he says man naturally desires not only to be loved, but to be lovely. Man naturally desires not only to be loved, but to be lovely. That's his one-sentence description of what makes us tick. So what makes us tick isn't money. And it's not power, and it's not fame. What makes us tick, deep down, what drives us is the urge to be loved. And by loved, he didn't mean physical love or romantic love. He meant attention, honor, praise, respect. So he says we want those things desperately. That's what gives us true satisfaction. Not money, power, and fame, but respect, honor, and people paying attention to us. That's what we care about deep down. But we don't just care about that. We also want to be lovely, meaning not just love, but lovely, meaning we want to earn those, that respect, that honor, and that praise through our actions, honestly. We don't want to be loved for something we didn't do. Now, what Smith says is because we want to be loved, we have this temptation. He says there are two ways to be loved. Pursue fame, power, and money, or pursue virtue. He says everybody is seduced by the glittering road, the fancy, impressive road of fame, power, and money. He said the quieter, better path is just to be a good person. And he said you'll earn the respect of the people around you, and you'll earn it honestly. Now, you could earn love through being rich, famous, and powerful, but what Smith says is it's hard to keep your moral compass when you're in pursuit of those things. And I think that's really the challenge of modern life, especially we live in such an incredible world where it's not – there are many, many ways to make a lot of money. It's hard to keep money in perspective. It's hard to keep fame and power in perspective. And what Smith says is if you're going to pursue those, you better keep them in perspective because they will pursue you if you're not careful. Mm.